The views expressed in this program are not necessarily those of FMR. Fine Music Radio.
Can it even be that this is our final book choice show for 2025? I find that a bit crazy. I feel like I just blinked and I was reading my first book of the year and setting my Goodreads goal, which was 52 books, which I didn't actually hit last year. I always do 52 books every year. Do you do the Goodreads book challenge? I always do 52 books a year. And last year I didn't make it, and this year I've completely overshot it. So that's exciting. I think I've got 58 or something, which is really great. Again, last year I think I was in the 40s. So we win some, we lose some, and I use it just as a guideline and try not to feel too pressured by it, although I do, to be honest, always feel pressured by it. So here we are, 23rd of December, and you are tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio. My name is Paige Nick. I am the host of this show every second Tuesday. And I'm joined by our sponsors, Exclusive Books. They're always here with us. If there's a book you seek that truly exists, you will find it on your Exclusive Books shelf at your local Exclusive Books, or you can go in store and check and see what they've got in store. And what's nice about this time of year is that Exclusive Books doesn't just have books, but they've got lots of gifts and wordy things and bookmarks and headlamps for reading and book cushions and notebooks and pens and puzzles and mugs and just everything you could ever imagine. So check out your Exclusive Books while you're doing your gift shopping or your own shopping. And we have a massive show, and so I want to get started straight away so that I don't waste a second. We've got Philip Todres is here, and every year we do an annual Zapiro interview about Zapiro's latest annual. So it's the annual interview. So we have that coming up first. Normally we end the show with that, and I thought this year let's start the show with that. And his annual this year is called What Else Could Go Wrong, and Zapiro is right here in the studio telling us all about the politics of the year, wrapping it up into his fantastic political cartoons. After that, we go into a slightly different kind of segment. We go from very light into slightly more serious. We are joined by Riley Herbert Henry, and he's talking about quite a serious literary fiction title called The Two Roberts by Damien Barr. Then we've got something really new on the show. We're ending off the year with something new that I'm very much looking forward to taking into the new year. We're going to bring you some Afrikaans reviews. Helene Kutsier is here, and she is reviewing Gerda Taljaard's novel, Die Grafdichter. And that will all be in Afrikaans because it's an Afrikaans title. So we hope you enjoy this new feature. We're always trying to bring you something new on this show. Then we've got Twangi Kalula is here with a book that's been a highlight for me at the second half of this year. It's just come out. It's by South Africa's very famous trendsetter or trend commentator, and his name is Dion Chang, and he's brought out a really cool book. It's called A Perfect Life, and it's about the craziness of pet owners. My sister's all have these pets that they absolutely love. It's about how we've gone a little bit mad. In fact, one of the statistics, I have read it and I really enjoyed it, even though I'm not a crazy pet lady. One of the statistics I read is that they sell more prams for pets in the Far East than they do for babies. How interesting is that? Anyway, so Twangi Kalula is here chatting. He'll be reviewing A Perfect Life by Dion Chang. After that, we've got a crime action threesome. Actually, it's a foursome in disguise. Shirley Guler is talking about the new David Baldacci, Nash Falls. Beverly Rose Miller is talking about the new Michael Connelly, The Proving Ground. And Vanessa Levenstein is talking about the two new Louise Pennies. That's why I said it's three, that's actually four. Grey Wolf and Black Wolf. These three authors are massive global thriller bestsellers. Their books have been made into movies. They've brought out dozens and dozens of books. Their books are all turned into shows on Netflix. So these are the big hitters. Then we wrap up the show. Mark Falconer is one of our guest reviewers, and he is here to tell us all about a book called Wild Swimming in the Western Cape, which is by Sarai Dowling and Matthew Dowling. Wild Swimming is so huge right now. It's a massive trend, and these books are selling like hotcakes, and this one's just come out. and it explores 100 of the Western Cape's most beautiful swimming spots. I think a lot of the recommendation is buy this book and then try go swim in every single one of these spots in the next year and try tick them off. Or they've got beautiful photographs and beautiful write-ups. You can just swim vicariously. If you're not big on a cold water swim or a wild swim, swim vicariously. And that will be our show. And of course, it's all bookended by some very fine music, because this is Fine Music Radio after all, starting with this first track, which is Sweet Dreams Are Made of This. Yep, for me, sweet dreams are made of this show and of books and of reading and of December. So, Sweet Dreams Are Made of This by the Buscade Soweto String Ensemble. Thank you so much, Mark Falconer. We are very pleased to have had you on the show.
Of his annual is just out, and it's called What Else Could Go Wrong? Question mark. Now, Jonathan, we always discuss the fact that being a satirist is not a funny business. It's not a joke. So the only thing is, in a sense, you're a historian. You're commenting on what happened. But now I'm going to put you in this position. You've asked a question. What else could go wrong? Can you look into the future and tell us how you see South Africa going forward?
If you look at my covers, all of them, all the annuals that I have and the covers and titles, they are poised in the moment. I'm not a crystal ball gazer. I don't look far into the future. I look into the now. I look into the like next week or next month or just shortly ahead, and I look at the past to kind of check and see what people are saying. So I'm not doing the crystal ball gazing. The question that is posed on the front of this annual is where you see all the kind of stuff that's gone wrong locally. You see the government of national unity with Ramaphosa and Steenhuisen. It's a little car that's kind of crashed down almost like a Chapman's Peak Drive cliff and has landed up on the rocks at the bottom with a little wave splashing. And they're kind of in there, and the two of them are saying, like, what else could go wrong? But the government of national unity, the Wildebeest, is sitting at the back, and he is seeing what else could go wrong, and that is Trump. It's the Trump tariff, which is a boulder that's about to crash on them. So for me, looking ahead is also looking at the present. It's the absolutely terrifyingly bad effect of the big populist demagogues, especially Trump, but also others, and the effect that Trump is having on the world. So that big boulder is labeled Trump tariff. And that's affecting us a lot and will affect us in the next while.
Well, what are the other things that had affected us over the past year that you want to focus on? And also, as I say, it's not a joke. Satire is wicked. It doesn't make you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So it's not funny, ha-ha.
No, and well, it can be. It absolutely can be. It can be funny, ha-ha. It can be funny with pathos. It can be unfunny.
But it's to make one think.
It is all about surprise, and it's all about making you think. And about perhaps putting a different spin on something so that you kind of, even if you've thought about it a bit, it sort of shifts it. It's about putting things that are sometimes not necessarily synonymous, not necessarily in the same picture, in the same picture, and then making you think of the comparisons or the switches or whatever. That's what I try and do. The other things, well, certainly what is sort of all wound up in this one is also the things that have been difficult with this supposedly government of national unity. I'm sure I already said last year, it's not a real government of national unity. It is really a grand coalition. There are a few pretty hectic parties and characters outside of the government of national unity. So it's not a real GNU, but we call it that.
But even if it's a coalition, we're one of the few countries in the world with a centrist coalition.
I don't think it's that uncommon. There are quite a few that have had a centrist coalition, but they, because things do tend to gravitate towards the center when people are trying, when there's only a few votes here or there, a few seats that you need to sort of collate. So,
but you haven't gone to the far right or the far left to make that happen.
This is true. Everything is centered around the center here. And then we've got a lot of loony stuff, which I would not call the left. It's not proper left. It is.
It should have left.
It should have left, yes. And then the sort of right wing stuff is actually affecting us very badly. That's the people like AfriForum and Solidarity who've influenced us with Trump. So what's in this book is the spats that we've had in this government of national unity, especially the VAT spat, but a couple of others as well. And those are some of the wheels that have come off this car. And then we've had this effect of Trump, which is continuing, and now that the G20, recent G20, with the boycott of America and some other countries, Trump is disrupting multilateral stuff. So that's a big part of what's been going on. And then things like, it's funny, ESCOM and stuff, it used to be central. There are things about the sudden recurrence of the odd bit of ESCOM, which we didn't expect. And then a big thing is the police commissions of inquiry and the parliamentary ad hoc committee and so people in authority, also government officials and cabinet ministers who've gone rogue, who've gone corrupt. It's a kind of state capture all over again, but with a focus on police. And I'd say another big theme in the book, of course, because it's almost a kind of litmus test of morality and principles and conscience at the moment, is Gaza. Of course, there are people who don't see it like that. There are people who are still in the herd mentality, unfortunately. And I always talk about being a Jewish cartoonist who has for decades now been hammering political Zionism, hammering Israel, hammering the United States for supporting Israel in the way that it does. And the Gaza issue has, in the last couple of years, has been absolutely, it's unconscionable. And so I've done some very strong cartoons on that, and will continue to do so.
And what about the Ukraine, and what about the other hard and tough areas,
and
dealing with Russia?
Exactly. South Africa, of course, has double standards, because South Africa is correctly tough on Israel and around the Gaza issue and all of that, but South Africa lets Russia off the hook in a very bad way. They've moved to more centrist position, but they have done that. And then, of course, there's things like Sudan and other conflicts around the world, which we cannot overlook, and which I'm only briefly touching on because I only do three cartoons a week now, and it's okay. I used to do six.
Well, Sapira, we are very pleased to be talking to each other again. It's an annual event, and we're very thrilled to have your new annual, your 30th. Sapira, What Else Could Go Wrong? It's published by Jacana, and it's available right now. Oh,
tsotsi bari ari enkomi tolens uta utwa botsotsi bari ari enkomi tolens
That was Meadowlands by the Afro Tenors, and you are tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio. My name is Paige Nick. I am the host of this show. Our show is sponsored very generously by Exclusive Books, and they really have everything you could possibly need for this season, for the festive season, for your holiday season. If you have to work through, which many of us do, I'll be working through. If you have to work through, maybe you want to treat yourself with a book, just to make yourself feel better about having to work while everybody else is decembering. After that Meadowlands track, and before we go back into the books, I want to tell you that all of today's fabulous tracks were compiled and curated by Mzu Makeda, wonderful, wonderful Mzu, who works at Fine Music Radio. He builds our show every 2 weeks, and he does it with such grace and elegance, and he has this incredible voice for radio, and he's just a wonderful human being to know. Mzu, thank you for everything you've done for us this year. You've made us sound good and feel good, because that's what you do. We love you and thank you so much. Right, back to the books. As I said, we're really shifting gear now. We're going from Zapiro, whose work is by its nature cartoons, they're funny, into something a bit more serious. We must have some literary fiction to dig into for our festive season or holiday season. And Riley Herbert Henry is the guy to bring that to us. Remember Riley? He's the one who read the entire Booker shortlist and then predicted his winner. Well, he's back. And this time he's back with a book called The Two Roberts, and it's by Damien Barr. Hi, Riley.
Imagine loving someone so completely that the danger never quite outweighs the need. Imagine a life where your greatest happiness must be hidden, coded, shut behind doors, and yet somehow becomes the very thing that makes your art possible. That tension sits at the heart of The Two Roberts, Damien Barr's luminous, aching novel. Based on the lives of Scottish painters Robert McBride and Robert Calhoun, this is not a book interested in neat biography or reverent homage. Barr is doing something far more daring. He writes into the gaps. He imagines the interior lives of two men, history half remembered and half forgot, and in doing so, asks what queer lives have always been forced to do, exist between the lines. Set against 1930 Scotland and a Europe tipping towards war, the novel understands queerness not as a single conflict, but as a constant pressure. The law is only part of it. More suffocating is the everyday vigilance, the self-editing, the silence, the knowledge that joy must always be provisional. Barr renders this quietly refusing melodrama. Love here is not a grand rebellion. It's an endurance. What elevates the two Roberts is Barr's prose. His writing is elegant but never precious, charged with sensual detail yet always grounded. He has a painter's eye for composition. Scenes are layered, colours recur, moments echo each other across decades. Time folds in on itself. Memory interrupts without warning. The effect is less linear narrative and more emotional accumulation, as though the novel itself was being built in brushstrokes. Art in this book is not a refuge from harm, but a site of exposure. Talent opens doors while only sharpening envy, addiction, and vulnerability. Barr is unsentimental about success. Recognition arrives late, unevenly, sometimes cruelly. The novel resists the comforting myth that brilliance guarantees survival. Instead, it shows how queer artists are often consumed by the very worlds that celebrate them. Crucially, this is a love story that refuses idealization. The Roberts are tender and loyal, but also flawed, self-destructive, and exhausted by the labor of existing. Barr allows them their mess. He understands that to sanitize queer history is to betray it. By the time the novel ends, The Two Roberts feels less like historical fiction and more like an act of reclamation, insisting that these lives were not footnotes, not cautionary tales, but full of contradiction and intensity. And as the book itself suggests, it's perfect. It's madness. It just is. The Two Roberts is written by Damien Barr and published by Canongate. Distributed in South Africa by Jonathan Ball Publishers.
Thank you so much, Riley Herbert Henry. That was a review of The Two Roberts by Damien Barr. That sounds like some wonderful literary fiction reading for your summer holidays. Next up, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, something I'm super excited about and something we've been working on behind the scenes for a couple of months now, trying to get it right. We really want to start bringing you in the new year Afrikaans reviews as well as English reviews. We used to have a show on the station called Book Kierse that was an hour of Afrikaans reviews. And now we're going to collapse that into our show and bring you as many regular Afrikaans reviews as we can. So we're very, very pleased to welcome Helene Kutsia onto the show with her first Afrikaans review for us. And it's of a novel by Gerda Taliaert, and it's called Die Grafdichter. Welcome to the show, Helene. I was going to say it in Afrikaans, but really, I'm only going to butcher it. Very happy to have you here. Welcome to the show. Tell us all about Die Grafdichter.
Ek het onlangs Die Grafdichter deur Gerda Taliaert klaargelees. 'N titel soos Die Grafdichter kan nie anders as om morbide nuuskierigheid op te wek by 'n mens nie. En die omslag met 'n eensame meisie en 'n wolf in wat lyk soos sneeu, nooi jou dadelik om die boek op te tel en in te spring. Met hierdie roman skep Gerda Taliaert 'n vangnet gespin uit verruklike Afrikaans, soos ek lanklaas indien ooit al gelees het. En sy hou jou vas met 'n verhaallyn wat so uniek is as wat dit interessant is. Die Grafdichter speel nie net af in Rusland nie, dis 'n eg Russiese roman wat jou ten volle wegvoer na die moederland. Die skrywer toer behoorlik met taal en flous jou tot op 'n punt waar jy jou oë moet uitwryf en seker maak, jy het nie dalk self in Murgenbeen verplaas na Oos-Europa nie. Suid-Afrika word wel op 'n slinkse manier ingevleg met 'n kopknik na ons eie komplekse realiteit. Maar die boek is egter nie 'n politieke of geskiedkundige prekery nie. Dis 'n lekker leesboek wat jou vir die duur daarvan laat ontsnap na 'n ander wêreld. Die storie begin met 'n ouma en haar kleindogter in die hart van 'n woud aan die begin van 'n eindelose winter. Daar is 'n takbok, daar is bloed en daar is verwondering. Daardie verwondering bly deurgaans by jou met die lees van die boek en lê steeds by my lank na ek die Grafdichter neergesit het. Die grafdigter is deurspek met verwondering en verlies en verlossing. Daar is ook vergifnis en bovenal verbintenis. Die karakters ontbloot hulle self van die leser in versigtige interaksies en die verhaallyn neem jou sagkens aan die hand tot op 'n punt waar jy as leser ook weer hinker na die woud van die begin van die roman. En soos ons stelselmatig die grafdigter self leer ken en begin verstaan waarom haar beroep die spulpunt van die roman is, word die leser dankbaar vir die skrywer se hantering van die verhaal. Die roman word aangebied in kort, treffende hoofstukke wat elk op sy eie geproe kan word en tog soemloos in mekaar vloei, soos die bloed van 'n takbok na jy hom in die oë gekyk en geslag het. Daar is geen vermorsing van woorde of van die leser se tyd in hierdie roman nie. Elke oomblik tel, nes elke asemteug tel as jy in die middel van 'n eindelose winter van die wolwe skuil. Die kleindogter word eventually 'n psigoterapeut in Moskou en op haar beurt die ouma se versorger. Versorging is ook 'n woord wat na die lees van die boek by my spook. Hierdie leser is goed versorg deur hierdie boek. Gerda Taljaard het hier vir ons 'n skat geskep wat soos 'n Fabergé eier 'n trotse plek op jou boekrak behoort te kry. Die grafdigter word uitgegee deur Penguin.
Baie dankie Helene Kutsier, that was fantastic and I love it when we can cover different kinds of books and try find something for every single listener of the show. So listener, if that one appealed to you, we brought you that review especially for you. And if you are a pet lover, then this next review is especially for you too, dear listener. Twanji Kalula is here, and he's talking about a book that I have loved this year. It's just come out. It's by Dion Chang, who is a very well-known, famous South African trend hunter and trend commentator. And this book is such a treat, whether it's a gift. I mean, I bought it as a gift for my sister, but I did that thing where you read it really carefully first. I didn't want to crack the spine. So I'm going to be giving that to her for her Christmas present. But I read it first and I loved it. And I'm not really a pet owner, but I'm very interested in trends. In fact, most of the nonfiction that I read is generally focused on trends. I like this kind of thing, the Malcolm Gladwell stuff and, you know, what people are buying, what people are leaning towards. I enjoy that. So that's what this book is. Perfect Life by Dion Chang. He talks about the crazy extremes that pet owners and pet lovers go to. It talks about the trends around the world, what people are spending on pet equipment, pet dog beds, dog flights, dog therapy, pet therapy, cat nip, cat outfits. It's mental. And another thing that I'm crazy about is all those animal memes on the internet. I love those. So if that kind of stuff appeals to you, this book, A Perfect Life, will appeal to you too. But Twanji is going to tell us a little bit more. Welcome, Twanji.
I have been flirting with the idea of getting a pet for a while now, and I am not alone. Since the pandemic and even before that, pets have been playing a bigger role in our lives. And of course, as humans, we have kept domesticated pets for hundreds of years, but the last couple of decades have seen our love for cats and dogs reach new extremes. So when I was growing up, most dogs were guard dogs. They lived in kennels outside our homes and they were shooed away whenever they tried to enter the bedrooms. These days, many pets sleep in our beds. They wear designer clothing. They travel in private planes. They attend exclusive doggy daycares and they eat food prepared by gourmet chefs. And I found out in the book that I'm about to tell you about that dogs even have trust funds. I don't know where my trust fund is. I'm still waiting for it. The love we have for our pets has grown tremendously, and the multi-billion dollar pet industry has expanded in tandem. A leading South Korean online retailer, G-Market, announced that it had sold more prams for pets than prams for actual human babies in 2023. And this is a fact that intrigued me, but it also intrigued celebrated futurist Dion Chang, and he set about researching our pet obsession and documented his findings in a new book, The Perfect Life. Now, I've always really enjoyed Dion Chang's writing, and he's often bang on the money when it comes to trends. I remember thinking he was smirking his socks when he said that we would all be shopping and reading on iPads one day. And fast forward a decade plus, and I bought and read his book on an electronic device. So I believe this is a trend worth taking note of. The book starts off by trying to understand why we are spending more time and more of our hard-earned money on our pets. And it kind of puts forward this idea that as birth rates decline in many countries and many people opt not to get married or have children, pets appear to be playing an increasingly important role in our lives. The term fur babies has gone from something that many of us used to roll our eyes at 2 decades ago to the most accurate description of the relationships that many of us have with our pets today. Given that Dion was part of the editorial team that brought Elle magazine to South Africa, he's familiar with the finer things in life. He takes us on a tour of the world, showing some of the amazing and some very outrageous things the rich and the furry can indulge in. From designer spas built for pets to hotels for pets that I wouldn't mind staying in. And did you know there's a whole world of barkitecture? That's architecture for cats and dogs. It really is wild out there. Though there is a lot of focus on the extreme, the book makes it clear that the basic needs of pets should come first. And as a prospective pet parent, I was introduced to some very real considerations that I need to think about before I take the plunge, and not all of them were financial. One of the most important things that the book deals with is death. The truth is that most of us will outlive our pets, and this is potentially one of the most difficult aspects of pet ownership, particularly if you have a family and young children. A few years ago, Dion Chang was called to become a death doula, and he now specializes in helping owners prepare and come to terms with the death of their pets. I know it might sound a little out there, but dealing with death is never easy, and he shares some frameworks to ensure that the end stage of life is as considered as the tailoring on the Louis Vuitton bone trunk, which contains luxury bowls that he discusses early on in the book, which you can buy for your pets if you love them that much. Although this book is packed with fun facts about the pet industry, pet puns, there are lots of them, and practical tips to help you take care of your pets, it is also a book about the changing structure of family, obsessive consumerism, our desire for connection, and modern loneliness. It managed to entertain, inform, and delight. And another thing I really liked about it is the fact that it was written with a global audience in mind and gives readers a real global perspective of where we are at the moment. Now, animal welfare organizations always say that you should never give anyone a pet for Christmas, but you can give someone a book about pets for Christmas. A Perfect Life by Dion Chang was published by Pan Macmillan and retails for 360 Rand. It makes a perfect gift. I'm sorry, I couldn't help it. No fumara pama gamba na kukele la stando goba ni tala ganjani Daya peshi ya gola ntla sange na mfuma Okanya njenge langa lako haibo Doctor lalinkya kyambo ayolu hambo Alu sape
Welcome back. You're tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio. That track you just heard was Ma Cherie by Freshly Ground. My name is Paige Nick. I am the host of this show, and Exclusive Books are the sponsors of the show, which is super important to us. I don't think we could do this show without them, and they make such perfect partners for us. So we hope you'll support them. If you love a shop and what a shop offers, if you're a book lover, it's so important that we support the outlets that support the things we love. So I think before you go to a big international Amazon, look to the local people, look to an Exclusive Books store, look to Exclusive Books online. Really, we scrub their backs, they scrub ours. We love buying books from them, and they love bringing us books. So let's just keep the love flowing. We're into now our second last segment. And this is a special one because at this time of year, people like to unwind. It's been a year. If you've had anything like me, you've had a year. And so while we love to read literary fiction, you know, we like a sorbet as well. We really like a thriller, a wild action thriller. I see Dion Mayer has his new Scorpio out, and that'll come out in English in the new year. But we love that kind of reading that just immerses us. You know, when you get that tingle on the first or second page where you think, I don't want to do anything else. I just want to read this book. So here are three books that fall into that category. And as I mentioned up front, these are massive global bestsellers. There's no way you haven't heard these names before. Shirley Guler starts us off first with the latest by big name author David Baldacci. His latest is called Nash Falls.
Now, this is a Baldacci to die for. Nash Falls. No, not some waterfalls in South America or Africa, but Walter Nash, who falls down, far down. So far down, yet you know he has to get out and you want to see how. So here's a spoiler alert, which I only discovered when I finished reading page number 424. Coming soon is Nash Rises, and I can't wait. But back to the book at hand. It's riveting. Not only is Baldacci's imagination deeply fertile, but his research is impeccable on so many levels, at least to the uninformed about the complex world of international finance, trade, mergers and acquisitions, and profit and loss, about the art of tattooing, about building up not a six-pack frame but an eight-pack, about how to handle guns and how to navigate relationships, bosses and employees and family ties with sleazebags and sluts in between. Baldacci takes complicated deep dives into networks of financial transactions with three levels of accounting books, and I have the utmost regard not only for his knowledge, but his ability to unpack layer after layer of intrigue and intelligence while keeping your attention page by page. Walter Nash is a smart workaholic selected by the FBI to help unravel a scam that could bring a country, America, to its knees. The three previous people picked had come to final sticky ends, and Nash quickly saw how easy it was to be exposed. But did he really have an option? Nash is a vulnerable man with a demanding daughter and a duplicitous wife. Who to trust? The FBI, who are the puppet masters? The older friend of his late but very alienated father? His boss is out of bounds because said boss and said boss's father are the suspects. Slowly, Nash falls. He crumbles. He is being framed for an accident he didn't cause. He is being accused of horrendous and untrue acts. His very existence is being manipulated by those desperate, deliberate, and dangerous who stand to lose everything. Just when you think it can't get any worse for him, it does. I'm not going to give any details because it would spoil it for you. Beyond bringing in murder and molestation, beyond body shaping, beyond recognition, beyond the gun rangers and physical fights, the genius that is Baldacci keeps you glued to the side of the man who is pushed from a perfect, if predictable, life into purgatory. Now I have to wait and see how he gets out of it, who survived and who didn't. Nash Rises. I'm not surprised and I can't wait to see it early in 2026.
Thank you, Shirley. And now in the same genre, we turn to Beverly Rhoas Miller, who, as much as she loves a very literary novel and writes super, and she's an investigative journalist herself, so the books she writes are investigative journalism. So as much as she loves literary fiction and investigative journalism, I've noticed that Bev also really likes a stomping thriller. So here she is chatting about the new Michael Connelly, again, millions and millions of copies bestseller. His latest is called The Proving Ground. Hi, Bev.
If you love courtroom dramas, then it's likely you will know of the Lincoln Lawyer, the canny Mickey Haller, whose defense of his clients have long enthralled readers and also viewers of the Netflix dramas based on his character. He's the type of lawyer you'd want on your side when the chips are down, the judge is against you, and the jury isn't sympathetic. Author Michael Connelly, multi-million bestseller, has turned Mickey Haller into a kind of cult hero. The clever, never-give-up lawyer who will employ all the tricks of the legal trade and has been in quite a few scrapes himself. His latest novel, The Proving Ground, takes us into new territory for the Lincoln lawyer, so named because his office back in the day was the back seat of his Lincoln car as he sped around Los Angeles. Now the older, established Mickey has moved from criminal defense to civil cases, a new venture for him, and his first case is about a subject that is high on our agenda these days, AI and the possible effects it might have on a young mind. I especially wanted to read this book, partly because I've liked most of the Connelly books, but also because AI exercises my temper quite a lot these days, and I wanted to see how he resolved this complicated case. in which an AI chatbot was used by a 16-year-old boy to form a strong friendship and alienate him from his friends, and in particular his girlfriend. We know this is already happening, as young people are experiencing alienation and forgoing actual real-life friendships for screen contacts and fake AI-generated friends who validate them. The boy is persuaded by his online AI girlfriend to kill his real-life girlfriend, who he feels has rejected him. Now, the anguished parents of the murdered girl, as well as the young killer's mother, are suing the company that owns the chatbot. Mickey Haller's strength as a lawyer is that he's flexible and able to anticipate the unexpected. He knows that the courtroom is a stage in which a carefully choreographed drama unfolds, and he seeks out the weak spots in the script. This is the first case of its kind, and the bigwigs in the company he's suing, Tidal Wave, are confident he has no chance of winning. His challenge is to prove that the AI algorithm created by Tidal Wave not only encouraged the young teen to kill, but that its owners can be held to account. They have millions to spend on defending themselves in this case, in which a teenager was told it was okay to shoot someone. The case chases back and forth. At one stage, our Lincoln lawyer seems to be winning, only to be knocked back. The tension holds to the end, and no, I'm not going to give any spoilers. But one of the reasons I wanted to read this book is because I think that the dangers of AI in our future are only beginning as we build a technology that initially looks so useful, but has the potential to kill us all in the future, and I mean that quite seriously. Just 2 years ago, the National Association of Attorneys General in the United States warned that we are engaged in a race against time to protect ourselves from the dangers of AI. They added that the proverbial walls of the city have already been breached. Don't say you weren't warned. The Proving Ground by Michael Connelly will give you plenty to think about and moves at a smart and very readable pace.
Thank you so much, Beverly. And this isn't necessarily my genre of choice, but you kind of made me want to read that one. It's a very interesting concept, isn't it? And the thing is that it's so rooted in what we're dealing with right now. I'd be very curious to know the outcome of it. So you did whet my appetite on that one, The Proving Ground by Michael Connelly. And lastly, in this little thematic segment we've got of genre thriller action fiction, Vanessa Levenstein is here, and she's giving us a twofer, what we like to call a twofer, which means you get two for one. Vanessa has read very deeply, as she does, the new Louise Penny. There are two of them, Grey Wolf and Black Wolf. And Vanessa has read them both. She's compared them. She's gone back and reread them. And she's brought us, as always, such an insightful review. Vanessa, you put so much work into these reviews. All our reviewers, they do. They put so much work into these reviews. But I can feel your passion for Louise Penny. And I can feel how much interest you have in these two books. Thank you for this very thorough review. And welcome to the show.
If you're a Louise Penny fan and have read her previous 18 novels set in the fictitious town of Three Pines in Quebec, then like me, you eagerly await the next installment. Because these crime thrillers are so much more than whodunits. At the centre is the deeply moral, introspective, so kind and brilliant Chief Inspector Armand Gamache. His beloved family extends beyond his immediate family to the eccentric community of Three Pines itself, including a duck who's actually a character, not even a pet. I remember former Book Choice editor Gorry Bose-Taylor commenting that for such a small town, there certainly was a lot of murder, and this is a conclusion the author herself seems to have come to when plotting The Grey Wolf and then its sequel, The Black Wolf. In fact, Penny acknowledges so much in her acknowledgements. The story begins with a tale Armand was told a long time ago. The grey wolf represents strength and compassion. The black wolf, vengefulness. We all have both wolves inside us. And the wolf that wins is the one we choose to feed. In fact, making the moral choices, fighting one's demons, which we all have to do, is a theme that runs through the author's work. The plots of both books are so complex. So I read The Grey Wolf, then a few months later I read The Black Wolf. Then in order to do this review, to understand what was going on, I had to go back to reading The Grey Wolf and then back to reading The Black Wolf. And having read both books twice, I still don't really know what to say and which will be a spoiler or not, because there are so many things happening in it. people, locations, so many subplots. But at the heart of the story is a conspiracy with global repercussions. Gamache and his team must uncover who's behind it, what they're trying to achieve, and what secrets lie behind the breadcrumbs of dead bodies. Who in government can be trusted? And can Gamache overcome the past hurts committed against his family to see the wood from the three pine trees? The book, The Grey Wolf, ends on a cliffhanger. The second book, The Black Wolf, picks up a few weeks later as Gamache realizes an even bigger threat is at stake. Plot just feels too large for the author to contain. See, Louise Penny's gift lies in creating the nuanced, credible characters whose inner torments we feel so deeply. She doesn't need a global stage or the external hype to tell her story. The final pages of The Black Wolf feel rushed, jumping from place to place in order to tie everything together. But if you're a Gamache fan, you'll still read the book. And like me, in spite of all these things, enjoy them. An interesting location in The Black Wolf is the Haskell Opera House, where quite literally, and I never knew about this place before, one room, I think it's the children's library, is divided by black tape. On one side you've got Canada, and the other side you've got United States. So my message to Louise Penny is this. As a fan of yours, who's fortunate enough not to work in the Haskell Opera House, but our very own Artscape Opera House, please take us back to the heart of the Three Pines. Fewer intrigues, fewer people, fewer locations, because less really is more.
And you are tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio with me, your host, Paige Nick. Book Choice, which is a good choice. We are here every second Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m. and I like to natter on about books. If you see me in public and you come up and say hi, please tell me what you're reading. Let me know. Book Club is just about my favorite conversation to have at any given time. We're going to wrap up the show now with Mark Falconer. Now, Mark Falconer is a guest reviewer, which means he only joins us a few times a year when a title catches his interest or we think it's something that feeds into his interests. Then we ask him to join us and tell us what he thinks of certain books. So when this book came up, we decided that Mark Falconer was the perfect person to review it because it's a subject of interest to him. So Mark Falconer is here, and he's chatting about a very new book. It's by Sarai Dowling and Matthew Dowling, and it's a guide to wild swimming in the Western Cape. In this book, they explore 100 of the region's most beautiful swimming spots. Now, this is new news because wild swimming is so big globally. It's amazing how these trends, I've noticed another one now is the saunas, the mobile saunas. These things are such trends. I was saying to somebody like 2 years ago, we weren't talking about wild swimming. We were just starting to do it. And we certainly weren't doing these saunas and having these whole wild swimming experiences. So it's also interesting to me how I was in the UK earlier this year and I saw how it's taken off like wildfire there too. And it's not like they have warm weather to swim in, but people really are seeing the benefits of it. A friend of mine, my editor, has been struggling with long COVID, and she talks a lot. Her name is Helen Moffat. She talks a lot about how the cold swimming has helped her with some of her symptoms of long COVID, and it's given her back a lot of hope about her health. So I think there are so many positive benefits to wild swimming, and so a book like this is super useful to us all as it helps us get a little deeper into, I suppose it's not a sport, into the activity of wild swimming. So I'm very pleased to welcome Mark Falconer to the show to tell us all about his wild swimming experience.
Hello, I'm Mark Falconer, and I'm reviewing A Guide to Wild Swimming in the Western Cape. Explore 101 of the region's most beautiful swimming spots. The authors, Sarai Dowling and Matthew Dowling, and this is published by Rockhopper Books. If you're looking for a glorious Christmas prezi for gouty Uncle Rupert or a family gift for the athletic Energizer bunnies with two labs, you have just found it. Also lovely to have or to give to out-of-town visitors to our beautiful, watery Western Cape. Or perhaps even better, some inspiration to stimulate and inform a New Year's resolution. This book is certainly the one for you. It's a beautiful, glossy and very well-designed publication with so many gorgeous color images, many taken by the authors of sensational, beautiful coastal spots. There are also careful sketches of plants and birds and animals, an exquisite record of this marvelous place we live,
at the southernmost tip of the African continent. You don't have to be a swimmer with a capital S, just a dipper in water or in texts, or even a bobber in a crocheted bikini. This book is a reference treasure, which age will not dim nor custom stale its almost infinite variety. It will become a reference for many years to come. This book on wild swimming, which is loosely defined as swimming for enjoyment, to immerse oneself in water for connection and for pleasure and to restore one's humanity, not to get to a destination or to train. I also like the idea of it being wild in a world where wildness is not acknowledged or celebrated, but often concealed or denied. Sarai has also written a book on tidal pool swimming. So this book, you have beaches and inland pools and rivers, but not tidal pool swimming. So, for example, you have Clifton and Beta Beach and Seaforth. I noticed that there was no boulders, but of course you can't put everything into the book. And anyway, penguins already own boulders. It's also a call to action, to seek and to find these exquisite natural gems and to plunge in, unlike the prevaricating speaker in Ogden Nash's Pretty Halcyon Days. It is pleasant to sit on the beach with nothing at all to be done. How pleasant to look at the ocean, democratic and damp, indiscriminate. It fills me with nobid emotion to think I'm able to swim in it, to lave in the wave, majestic and chilly. Tomorrow I crave, but today it is silly. It is pleasant to look at the ocean. Tomorrow, perhaps, I shall swim in it. It is so impressive about the book is the generous, intentional, responsible tone. It is comprehensive and tells you all you need to know about the practicalities to consider if you choose to engage in wild swimming. But it is far, far more than this. It is a book about human connection with oneself, with one's community, and with our beautiful, fragile planet, the pale blue dot, as Sagan has it. Just listen to a short extract from the preface. I think this is Matthew. The sea has become my refuge and delight over the course of my life, and I love nothing more than sharing these spaces with interested people. My swims are not just physical acts. They are also rituals of connection to land, to history, to the people. People who have come before and who swim beside us now. I've witnessed how wild swimming can soften grief, build community, and restore a sense of wholeness. I did not grow up with easy access to the ocean, so I don't take these waters for granted. This is why I believe these spaces must be protected, celebrated, and most importantly, be made accessible for all of us. These authors are the swimmers you want in your squad. Cold water will do that for you, make you cheerier, diminish your depression, reduce inflammation, boost your immune system. It is a truth universally acknowledged. The colder the water in which one swims, the warmer the heart. Wild Swimming in the Western Cape is a remarkably inclusive text, not only touching intelligently and sensitively on the philosophical and socio-political aspects of swimming and wild water access, but also on ecology and conservation, with short but really lovely sections on life in and around the water, fish, reptiles, birds, insects, mammals, and sea plants. The Darlings frame the act of swimming not as conquering the cold, but as entering into a relationship with it. The description of the kelp forests and the rocky outcrops suggest a communion with nature rather than a consumption of it. Wild swimming in the Western Cape is a real triumph, a multi-leveled success. It satisfies the adventurer who needs to know where to park and what gear to pack, but also satisfies the philosopher who understands that dipping into the ocean is a kind of baptism, a washing away the noise of the city. I cannot recommend this glorious book more enthusiastically. And then again, this is a guide to wild swimming in the Western Cape. Explore 101 of the region's most beautiful swimming spots by Sarai Darling and Matthew Darling, published by Rockhopper Books.
Thank you so much, Mark Falconer. We are very pleased to have had you on the show, and we're always very grateful when you join us. We've come to the end of our show, so before I make some thanks, I want to tell you what I'm reading right now. In between work, I'm still going to be frantically working right till the end of the year, but I am reading Flesh by David Saleh. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. My friend Charlotte Bauer of the Charlotte Bauer Book Club loaned it to me, and I'm reading it to see what all the fuss is about, because this is the book that won the Booker Prize in 2025. I'm seeing a lot of great reviews. I'm about 50 pages in, and it is quite Moorish. it's so far about a young man's sexual awakening. I'm curious to see. I always feel about these books that win the massive awards. I read them and I look to see, like, is it hype? Do I feel it's really different enough? And I also read this year The Safe Keep by Yale van der Woude, which won the Women's Prize, and it also won the Booker Prize in 2024. And I can honestly tell you that after I read it, when I got to the end of it, I thought, yes, this is a worthy winner. So I'm curious for myself to see if I feel the same way about Flesh. As I said, I'm always curious to hear what you're reading. So feel free to email me at the Fine Music Radio studio. You can find our email address on the website or on the Fine Music Radio app. Email me. The email will come through to me. I always respond if you want to chat about what you're reading. Or join us on the Good Book Appreciation Society, where we are always 24/7 talking about what we're reading. I don't know if I mentioned that. The Good Book Appreciation Society is on Facebook if you want to join us there. So this show, if you missed anything, we went quite quickly through a lot of titles. If you missed any of these titles or names of these books, you can find this show uploaded as a podcast on fmr.co.za or on the FMR app. So you can re-listen to the show or pick up where you left off and find the titles that you're interested in. And again, I've already thanked Mzuma Keita. I want to thank our sponsors, Exclusive Books. Thank you for the work you've done with us this year. It has made a huge difference. To have a corporate sponsor like that is a big deal, and we are very, very grateful, and we hope all our listeners will support you. We support you, and we love you. Thank you. Again, a huge thanks to all our reviewers. Not all of them are on today's show, but every single person who's reviewed a book on this show this year, we are endlessly grateful for you. Thank you so much to the publishers who send us these books to read, or send them when we ask for them. We often write to them and beg, please, can we read the latest Michael Connelly or the latest David Baldacci or whatever it is. And they so graciously send us these books. And the authors, Zapiro, who came on today's show, all the authors who've written these books, all the authors who've been on our show this year. We couldn't do this without you. We are endlessly grateful. And thank you to Fine Music Radio for this space. I know this is like an Oscar speech. I must wrap up. It's just going on far too long. Thank you all so much. It's been an incredible year of book reviewing and book loving. And I can't wait to set my goal for 2026 on Goodreads and get reading together with you. Have a great rest of 2025 and happy reading. FMR.